Before I introduce our speaker, one of the gifts of being sober is having friends. And this guy and I, we go way, way, way back. You know, and if you would have told me that 26 years ago I'd be leading the meeting and introducing him, I would have said, no way. And he's an amazing member of AA, you know, and I promise I won't cry, but I love this guy, and he's an amazing member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful to be his friend, so let's have a nice welcome for Danny.
It's Craig, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I forget sometimes. My name is Danny. I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm up here looking at these microphones the whole time thinking only in Alcoholics Anonymous there would be two microphones up here. And then I got a couple drinks in my hand. I got two waters and I'm watching everything. My mind works this way. I'm thinking I got Craig up here. It's like, this is like the Price of Right, you know. He's up here. He's talking. Everybody's coming up here. There's all these events that's going on and everybody's laughing. And, you know, when I got here, I wasn't laughing very much. So I just want to welcome all the newcomers out there and let you know that you never, ever have to feel that way ever again. And I think you know what that feeling is because you probably feel it right now. Also, I'd like to welcome the people that came out, some of my friends that came out to hear me tonight, and I do appreciate that. Also, I'd like to thank Gino right there for reaching his hand out when I put my hand out and he took it. And I was thinking today about the relationship I have with a sponsor. It's like what it is. It's we just share. He shared his experience, strength, and hope because he had a little bit more time than I did, and he shared his hope with me, and I was able to get that hope and share it with another human being, and that's what we do here. I don't know why that works, but for some reason it does. I was in and out, in and out, in and out in this program. For so long, Brian would know this because we were both in and out at one time. We were doing this merry-go-round, and Mark, who took his birthday tonight, we were back. I was back there at that time. My sobriety date is June 18th, 1996. 15 and a half years of sobriety. I'll tell you, for someone that could not stay sober a day, that's amazing. And why I share that with you is because when I got here, I was in and out of the program, and people were like giving me crap. And I was like, they're going, what step are you on? This lady would come up to me all the time I saw her. She goes, what step are you on? And I was like, I didn't know what she was talking about. No, really, I didn't know if it was a test. And then when I was new, I always remember this. I was new. I was sober at the time, and Marcia was. You had me in the car. It was outside my meeting. I had these emotional problems, and you said, "Do you believe in God?" And I said, "Yes." And I didn't know if that was the right answer or not, but I just said it. You know, I had to act my way into right thinking here, and because my thinking was messed up. And I was in and out, and all these people would say, what are you doing with yourself? What are you doing? What step are you on? You know what? People like you, you know, you're not going to make it here. You should leave. And after for so long, you know, you just come in here, you have all these girls, you look good, and then you leave with them, and then you go out and drink. And, you know, and I worried so much about how I looked on the outside, but I didn't really know if the inside really mattered, because if you saw what I looked on the outside, you thought I was doing okay. But inside, I was really absolutely dying. And I really had to get to the point, which Kenny was talking about, being so desperate enough that I was able to ask a higher power into my life. And I'm really grateful that I got there. And if you're new and you're suffering, I mean, I feel bad, and I want to really help you and give you. I'm going to write a four-step for. I would almost write your four-step. I mean, Gino tells me, this is the things I do. I'll write your four-step, but you got to go through it yourself, you know. And that's the only way you're going to learn. And I have done every possible thing wrong in sobriety. I don't know. You know, I have a four-year-old. And, you know, he doesn't really listen very much at all. So you expect an alcoholic like us being adults to listen? No, we don't listen very well at all. But I was born, I was 6 and a half months. My mom had me at 6 and a half months. I was a premature baby. My vocal cords weren't tied, and I had a lot of complications, and I had some learning disabilities. I had stuttering problems as a child, and I had problems. My mother would give me sedatives to sleep at night. Back then, I guess that's the happening thing to do. But I had sedatives. They were like codeine, alcohol, and a lot of maybe some whiskey, which sounds good. As a child, I don't know any better. But what that did was it calmed me down as a child, because I had a lot of, I was one of those kids that I would bang my head on the cement, you know, because to get attention, and you know, it kind of hurt, you know. So I would do it. I would do it to get my way, and that's how I got stuff. That's how I used to hit my head on the cement until I got my way, and I usually got it pretty quick, because, you know, until they got me a helmet, you know, I have to wear, a helmet. So, I was a little strange kid. I had stuttering problems. I couldn't see very well, so I had big glasses, and but what I did know at an early age, I wanted to be liked. For some reason, I wanted to be loved. I don't know why I felt this way, but I wanted to be loved. And when I was about, and I didn't listen very well. I don't know what child does, but my mom told me when I was, you know, four, you know, don't go in the medicine cabinet and don't chew on those vitamin C chewables. So I went in the medicine cabinet and I did the whole bottle. And I found myself, well, I was in the car throwing up on my way to the emergency room. And I had my first overdose as a child at an early age. Soon and far from that, I ran away from home, back in the police car, and they knew where I lived because I was a stuttering kid in town. You know, I couldn't talk. You know, I had such fear. And I was talking to my brother the other day. I have one brother left living. He shared that it was because my dad was so abrasive with us. He was so always yelling and screaming, and, you know, I was so fearful. I was, you know, I remember, you know, I don't think I was potty trained for a long time, but I would hold it because I was scared that if I went in my pants, I'd get punished. You know, it was just like one of those things back then. It was just, I was such fear, you know, so much. It was such a lot of yelling and screaming and in my family growing up. And so I found it out in sports. I became really good at tennis at an early age, and I used that. It's funny, I want to show a story. I played in this tennis tournament when I was young, and the guy that beat me was actually really good. He was a very good tennis player. And we had our pictures taken in the newspaper and everything, and later down the road, like, I don't know, like 15 years, there's this guy, and he became a major, major drug dealer, this guy. Big, 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 big wheel. And anyways, I ended up getting some stuff from this guy, and I didn't pay him, you know, because I don't pay those people for some reason. His name was, I don't want to say his name, well, I don't know, I think he's dead, but anyways, I showed him, because I heard they were after me, and I showed him the picture of us as a little kid, said, "Hey, don't worry about it." And that was kind of cool. I got off on that one, but that's kind of a weird thing. But anyways, I played sports. I was very good at sports. I was kind of accepted because I was good at it. I played all the sports. Very good. Did that. Studying in school. I don't know. I didn't really. I was supposed to wear glasses, and I kind of didn't want to wear them because people were making fun of me, and I chose not to wear them, and I just kind of got by. And I knew I couldn't see, but it was so important how you looked at me growing up. And it was just, I'd rather not, my pride and ego, as such a little kid, you know, no one said this stuff to me. I just figured it out, that pride and ego, how I felt, my feelings. And so I just kept doing sports and kept getting by in school. You know, people would help me. And I had some problems in school with The nuns, I went to a Catholic school, and the nuns would swim in our swimming pool on Saturdays. And we would, I'm probably going to hell for this, and I'm really sorry. But I used to, me and the kids, I knew I had a little bit of a problem. Me and the kids used to like look through the, you know, stare at the nuns undress and swim in the pool as kids. And we were like, you know, it was not, we just did it. And I was very young. I don't think I knew what I was doing, but I don't know. It was just crazy. But my parents were really big in the church back then. And I think my dad always bought something when he did something wrong at home. And I was raised Catholic, and it was just all I knew, I felt at the time that the way they were teaching me, that I was just totally not a good kid. I'm being punished, and why should I even try? That's how I felt. And I don't know if that's probably my perception, because I am an alcoholic, very selfish and self-centered. So as growing up, doing all these things, doing sports, my dad decides, I didn't really drink yet, but my dad decides to take me to move to San Clemente, because that's where I'm from. He moved us when I was like 13 to San Clemente. I played in a big tennis tournament. I won, left, came down here to live. And then my dad left me and my mom up in a condo up on this hill. And my dad was a military guy, like always strict with us, always told me what to do. I was never out of line. God, you know, I could never be out of line. If there was a, my parents were like, you know, if there was a girl on the TV set or something that had a bikini, I was not allowed to look at her. It was just all these things, all these rules, these restrictions that I had. It was crazy. And I just felt so like I was trapped. I felt my dad left my mom and I up in this hill and split. After my parents were married for like 36 years of marriage, my dad left, went back to where we used to live, hooked up with some young lady, and then they got married and went to Vegas. And left me and my mom. And then my mom went nuts. And I just remember, like, my mom's nuts. I'm free. I was free. I started drinking with these kids in high school. And I found alcohol, and I was free. I didn't stutter anymore. And my words connected properly. And I just felt so free from drinking. I felt like I could do whatever I want. My mom was crying, like, nights about my dad. I was drinking, having a good time, and then I got involved in surfing. I was surfing all the time, and I was just having a blast. I was having a blast, and my mom was dying. My mom was literally dying the whole time, but I was raised by the surfer guys and went to school, you know, fully got out of school at that time, and I drank all the time on the weekends. I always drank. I always drank, and went to college. And I got involved in sports there, and did very well. And then I drank and I partied. And this is kind of how it weird in my ego and my pride and all this stuff. My dad said I was going to be really rich. He says we invented this thing because my whole life people were taking care of me. I never really, you know, I just people were always doing stuff for. They just were. My dad said I was going to be really, really wealthy, and I was like, great. I was doing partying and I was dancing in nightclubs. I went from like sports event guy to like, hey, I'm going to go dance in nightclubs for money. So I did that for a couple of years. I was traveling around with these guys and we go dancing in the 80s and all this stuff that was going on. And I know it was, and that's where I met you. That's the funniest thing about it. He used to be dressed up as Rod Stewart lookalike and back in the day. And God, it was just like, it was actually fun. And then what happened was, yeah.
It's kind of popping real bad.
Okay.
Do that more that way.
My last name is Murphy, so there's always a Murphy Law here with stuff. So, doing all this stuff, we found out that there was no money involved. And I never got that money, and all of a sudden I didn't know what to do. You know, I was like, I think like 26 or 27 years old, and I didn't really know what to do. And I was creating all these problems. I got to go pregnant. I wasn't paying child support. I owed IRS, state taxes. I got a couple of DUIs, drug possession, and I was just, you know, I was like living a rock star life, you know, thinking that I was, but I wasn't. And what happened was I had to go get a job. And it wasn't very pretty, you know. I didn't understand what to do. And so I started working this one job, and this guy sort of really got me, my manager got me involved in doing some other outside issues. And it was crazy. It was just like for a couple of years I worked at this hotel, and we were just partying and drinking and partying and drinking. And he was my manager, so it was totally fine, you know. It was he was doing it. And we were stealing from them completely. Just we were bringing our own beer and selling it there to like people that actually come in and use the resort. So we were like doing our own business. It was, so I got in trouble. I had some stuff that was going on. So I borrowed this guy's car and I crashed it, chasing this girl. And I ran into a pole. I dropped the car off at this place. I wrote a note. I said, "This is not my car. This is this other guy's car." And I dropped it at an auto body store. And I took off. I took off to Club Med. I got a job. So I got a job as a bartender at Club Med. So I decided that was a really good, maybe spiritual route that I would take. That was not a good spiritual route. But I went to Club Med and I drank. When I got there, the first night I got there, they cut me off from drinking in Club Med. It was crazy. I really think I hit a bottom in Club Med. It was one of my bottoms that I drank. Because all you do there is drink. You wear hardly any clothes, and you walk around with beads, and you just drink, and you post to please the guests. And that was a really good job for me. And I was a mess though towards the end, because I was like drunk and it wasn't good. So I stayed there, and then I came back here, and I was a mess still, and I'm trying to like get my life in order, and I just started hitting more bottom, and I started living like, and I had to go live in my mom's, who lives in Laguna in a one bedroom. I had to live in the living room, and I lived there with her. It was, you know, it wasn't good. I'm getting loaded, coming in and out of the house, and then she didn't want me anymore. So I went over to my brother's house, and then they didn't want me. My sister didn't want me. It was like I was being passed around, and everybody, I kind of used everybody up, you know. And that's just what we do. You know, you kind of feel sorry for the person, but we just kind of give up on you. And what happened was, I did get sober. I got sober a couple of years. And that's where I met Gino. And I was on step nine. Like, I didn't want to do step nine, because that's where you have to pay all those people back all the money that you owe. And that was kind of like lingering in my program. And I had some crisis going on. My daughter, which I didn't see because I bailed out on her because she's in Australia. And I just said, screw it. I was hurt, you know. It was poor me, self-pity. And I had some issues that I had, like I was dishonest, self-seeking, and I drank. I was sponsored a bunch of guys. This one guy, he actually got me, I asked him to get me some stuff, and he brought me over some stuff, and we drank, and we got high together. You know, and then we were in a meeting like a week later together, you know, like ready to raise our hands. I was so, that's humiliating. That was so embarrassing. I was like so shame, and I tried to get sober again, and I couldn't. I struggled. And I remember Gino was trying to help me, and he was writing these little notes to me, like, you do this, do that, do this, and do that, we'll be here, you know, show up, please, you know, do that. And I'm like, I just couldn't seem to do it. It just seemed too much to do, you know, to follow direction. When you're new, and you sponsor people here, you guys might relate to this. When you're talking to someone, they say this is too much information. Like, go to a meeting, to, you know, and to pray, to pick up the book. I mean, it's so easy. I do that stuff right now all the time. I live, you know. But back then, I just couldn't do it, because I honestly think I was trying to leave a door open for me to maybe drink again. Because I wasn't sure if, I wanted to get sober, but I wasn't sure if I really wanted to. I was still, you know, thinking that maybe I should. And I kept doing this for years. So what happened was this. This is what really happened to me, and this is the honest truth. I went to a meeting, and I saw Gino at a meeting, and then I went to another meeting down at the beach in the Gucci meeting. And I was at the Gucci meeting, and this guy named Howard was at the meeting, and we all went down to the beach, a whole bunch of us. This is a really true story. My problem were a lot of women when I got here. I had this issue: get in a relationship, go out; get in a relationship, go out; get in a relationship, go out; relationship, go out. I mean, I don't know if you guys can relate to that, but that's what I did. So I went down the beach, and this guy was there, and this girl that I had a problem with. Every time I was around her, for some reason, I would always drink. I'm not saying she was the problem, but for some reason, when I was around her, I always drank. So I was down at the beach, and this guy said, you have a problem. And I said, a problem with what? You know, I always had an attitude, being new. And I said, he said, you should go home. This is what he said to me. Go home tonight, get on your knees, and why don't you ask God in your life, the one who has all power, that one is God. Why don't you go find him? Do it. Go do it. Go do it tonight. And I said, okay, I will do that. So on the way home, the girl that I thought was my dreams was in my car. We were driving home. I always had a girl for some reason in my car when I was new, because we were both drunk. You know, we were both drunk or not really in. And I said to her, do you want to come in? And I said something. I said, no, I would like to get sober. I want to go get sober. I think about that, like, that's like, you know, here I am, I could go back in with this person, or do I want to get sober? Because I was feeling kind of needy that night, needy and insecure and all that stuff, but for some reason, I put sobriety first in my life that night. Went home, and I did what that guy said. And then, best thing ever happened to me, 5 days later, that girl got in a relationship with someone. And that got me off the hook. And I remember going to these meetings, and I had to pray, God, please make me a stronger person. And she was there with him. He had like 20 years of sobriety. And I was like I felt such like a loser. But I kept showing up. You know, I kept going to these meetings. And then I was in the meeting in the beginning, and this guy was sharing from the podium named Winston. He didn't like him very much. But he was sharing. And for some reason, he said something to do with steps. So my head started thinking, okay, everybody talks about working the steps. Okay, I'm going to work all the steps, and I'm going to tell everybody, I'm going to come back to AA and say they don't work. That's my plan. That is really my plan, what I'm going to do. Because really, I honestly think that they did not work for me at all. So I remember calling you up right away, Gino, and I said, I got my 4-step done. And he was like amazed, you know. I tracked him down, and I believe my 5th step within the first 10 days, and then I 6, 7, I was like jumping. I got the 9th, and then the 9th step I didn't really have a choice, because there was like the IRS was at my door, and I owed IRS tons of money, and then the child support, I owed $20,000. I didn't pay any child support payments. I was pissed. I was pissed. They left me. She took my daughter to Australia. You know, I was angry. I was selfish. I mean, you think about it. I wanted to get high. Who cares? So I had to start making these amends. You know, and what happened in working the 9th step? I want to share this with you, because I'm a type of guy that when I got here, I owe everybody money. I mean, if you knew me, like someone was, hey, you owe me money. You owe me this. I bought you this. I mean, wherever I went, I owed someone money. It was like this, you know. And today I don't have to be that way, which is great, you know. But what happened was I started paying these people off, and I started to like start feeling a little bit better about myself, that I was actually putting something into my program. I was like adding something into AA. I was like actually contributing to my sobriety. I think it was more contributing. Like you're putting money into the bank because you're putting it for savings or stamps and diamonds. By doing the 9-step work, I think I was contributing into my life about keeping me here. I was securing myself. And that really helped me. The ninth step was big for me because I had a lot of financial problems, and I didn't want to get sober because I had too much debt. So 15 and a half years later, I was able to take care of a lot of that wreckage, you know. And I had so many different things in this program, you know. I had problems in relationships, and I used the 552 prayer all the time. I when someone hurts me bad, it's usually in a relationship, I put their name down, I pray for them for health, happiness, prosperity, and everything you want for myself, for them, thank you, God. And I've been doing that ever since in relationships. I do it for 2 weeks. If it doesn't work, I do it more. And usually that's helped me in resentments. I'm a big resentful person. I don't know if you are, but I am way big into resentments. You could just say that I look a little chubby tonight and I'll go off in my head. You know what I mean? I'm just one of those people, you know. And some of my friends that really know me will like say that just to bother me, you know. Hey, you look a little chubby over there, you know. But what I really like about being sober is you know, the friendships that we get here and the relationships that we get here. I have relationships with people today, you know, that are unbelievable. I want to share one thing that's something about being dishonest, and I really share this. But when I was I have a little boy. I don't know you guys. I love my little boy. He just turned 4, and we play pirates. And I created this pirate thing up because he wanted to stay at the home all the time. And I couldn't get him out of the house, so I pretend to say that we're going to go on pirate adventures, and I would go bury treasure out there, and then he'd get excited to get out of the house now. So now the whole thing is pirates. We're always out of the house doing pirate adventures now. And his birthday was a pirate theme and the whole thing. So now it took off pirates. So, and I told him, he is a pirate today, but you can't tell anybody. And I have magic powers. He knows I have magic powers. I went to the Ritz-Carlton. We were at the Ritz the other day. We were walking through, and in the bathroom, the water turns off and on. So I was in there, and I go, like that. And he goes, wow. And I go, I got magic powers. Don't tell anybody. So he told his mom that I had magic powers, and she didn't like that too much, but I really don't care. But in my sobriety, about 5 years ago or so, I almost drank. I almost drank. I almost, there was that one time that I almost drank, and I remember calling the guy up at the middle of the night. About 2 this morning, I knew this guy, and I said, can I get some stuff from you? And I begged him on the phone, and he said, no, not till tomorrow. And I said, no, I need to do it now, because, you know, I had that thing going on, and I couldn't stop it. And he said, no, tomorrow. And I said, So the next day, I told someone about it, and then I went to a meeting, shared about it, went to a bunch of meetings. And that feeling went away. I'm glad that it happened, because I thought I was, you know, I was doing really good. I was doing pretty good. But it scared me, because my whole life I would have never had my son if and that's been one of the most enjoyable things, and other things in my life today that are most enjoyable. I would have never had that if I would have took a drink. And what it was I was coming out of a marriage. And I was very unhappy. And probably if I take a look at my part, there we go again, being selfish and self-centered, self-seeking, dishonest. And what happened was, she got pregnant, and it was about, this is a good story. This is a weird story too, but it's a good story. She was pregnant, and she lost the baby. And I said that, you know, I'm one of these codependent people. Or I don't know if I was codependent, or I cared. You know, I was concerned because of what she went through. Was devastating. So I told her I would help her to have another child. And when I was doing that, I was involved in another relationship with someone else. And that person lost their kid. And here I am being sperm donor here and then over here on one side trying to help someone. I was like doing this double, this life. That's where I got to a point that I wanted to drink. And I watched someone who lose a child, and it was really painful to go through that. And then here I am, you know, doing this, thinking I'm just doing this because I'm trying to like please people. I'm a big pleaseable person. You know, I would probably marry you just so, you know, you just get off my back. So I want to please you. You know, I'm one of these people, and I not marry so much marry you, but buy a car from you too. You know, I've done that too. I've bought like 5 cars. You know. And, you know, I go to the dealership and they're so nice and I want to buy a car because I feel so bad for them, you know. And these are the things that I do in my head because I want to be liked, you know. It all starts when I was a child. So I do this thing and I'm doing the donation of the sperm and we're doing this and have this child and we do all this. And the other girl, I thinking that this, I would never have a child, and it took. The baby, it worked. I went, oh my God, it worked. And then here I am, this person, and they lost their kid. And I'm like, oh my God, I'd really need a drink because I can't tell anybody, I can't tell her that I'm going to have a child and you just lost your kid. I got to tell you something. That was really, I had to tell her, the girl that lost her child, that I was having a baby. And I gotta tell you, she took it well, and then for 2 days I heard things that I've never wanted to hear. And you know what? I listened. I just listened. And we became later down the road we became friends. We actually became friends. We hung out, and you know what? She's a very instrumental. I watched the program in her and how she reacted towards me and how she is a AA member, and that was amazing. And the biggest gift, like I said, my ex-wife never probably thought that I was going to be there for my kid. And they just thought I would never show up. And I think because they did not want me to be there, it made me to be there. Because I wasn't there for my daughter. And I since my baby's been born, when he was born, I was there. And my first couple of years, I logged everything. I had like 788 visits for 2 years. In this last couple of years, I see him as much as I can. I'm there consistently in his life, showing up. I pay. They don't want money from me, but I pay. I suit up. I show up. I suit up. I show up. Sometimes I want to leave. Sometimes I'm not happy. And sometimes I'm like, you know, I'm not getting what I want, and I want to leave. And I call people on the phone. And the this whole thing with my ex-wife, it's gotten a lot better than what it was. It was something that was really hard, and it's been a lot of humility. This is a big test for me, you know, to share what I just went through with that whole dishonest thing wasn't a good thing, and that was one of my big growing steps here, and I wanted to read something that I do that I was suggested to do when. 2 years ago, I found myself in a meeting at the Canyon Club in the morning, and I was literally crying in the morning, and because I was so devastated about me with my child, because I was fighting that we had a custody. It was a lot of stuff, and I just couldn't do it no more. And I was at the meeting, and this guy named Mike Rutter. I don't know if you know him, but he's just an amazing spiritual. He guy's an amazing man, and what he did, and this is my little checkoffs. But I read this thing, and I think you guys have read it before. It's in the book. It's on page 66 and 67. And I want to read this because this is what I do every night for my relationship with my kid. So I could have this life with him and not want to think bad, you know, like things I want to do to her, you know, and things, you know, blame on her. She's not this, you know. And this is what's really helped me. This was our course. We realized that people who wrong us were perhaps spiritually sick, thought we did not like their sentence and the way these disturbed us. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance and pity and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick person or sick people. How can we be helpful to them? that is really hard to be helpful to someone that's hurt me. And I called someone the other day. I was like, you know, like, I do all this. I do so much. I do this. I do that. I do this. And the first thing I got was like, you know, you're selfish and self-centered. And I never thought that I was that way when I was doing so much. I never thought that if I do a lot for you, why am I being selfish? And what I didn't realize that it was all about me, you know. And this is the most important part. And this is what I'm learning with people. We avoid retaliation or argument. We want to treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chances of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take kindly and tolerant view to each and every one. So if I'm fighting with someone and arguing with someone, I can't really be of service to anybody. And you guys know that. You know, you guys fighting with someone, arguing with someone, you're like upset, you're in your car, you're calling your sponsor, going, you know, you're going, I got this, I got that going on with you, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, but how can you be of service to someone else when you're doing that? You know, and I've helped so many people that I was angry at that I wanted to like chew on them. And because I didn't do that, I was able to help them. And it's amazing how it works. I don't know why I was able to help them, but I was, you know. And this program is really not, is I found it's really not about me. It's about you guys. And I really did not know that when I got here, because I thought I was going to get a lot of money, and I was selfish, dancing in nightclubs, and you know, doing things probably weren't very nice, you know. But I've gotten a little bit better in my sobriety, a little bit. I've learned that I might not be the most honest person at times, but I've learned to be honest with one person. You know, and I've learned that if I've done something that I felt like it wasn't right, that I was able to share with someone, like, this is what I did. And then I write inventories. Inventories has been a big part of my sobriety. I do inventories over and over and over and over, constantly. And it's been a big help. And so if you're new, I really, really would like for you to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And all the birthday people, I really enjoyed you guys being up here. And thank you for letting me share.